Howdy and welcome to the 10-Week Bible Podcast. I'm your host, Darren Hibbs, and this is part of a special week of interviews. Thanks for listening to the 10-Week Bible Podcast. Join me as we pray before we get started today. Lord, would you give us a greater desire for your word so that our desire for you would increase, Lord? We want to know you more. Fill our hearts today. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay, today we have a special guest, Matt Whitman. Matt is a husband, father, and pastor living somewhere in the confines of the reclusive state of Wyoming, hopefully not wrestling a bear to the ground as we speak. He's the creator of the 10-Minute Bible Hour, a YouTube channel that, in my opinion, is the best online Bible study video series out there. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's nice to be here. Thanks for saying nice things. I mean, it's okay when people don't say nice things, but I guess I won't argue when people do.
Matt, I love what you're doing. And, I've listened to a few conversations, that you've had, you know, in your podcast and on your stuff. And I love the image of, just bears wandering around. the state of Wyoming. I'm sure you don't encounter them that much, but I love the image of someone in our modern era, you know, just kind of happening upon them and having to deal with them.
It's part of life.
Well, you know, I want you to talk about yourself. Tell us, Matt, about you. I'm gonna tell everyone why I'm having you on here, but give us a little bit of biographical background on who you are.
Yeah, I'm up for that. You covered the important stuff. I'm married. I've got three kids. I like all of my family. That's a good place to be, I suppose. I grew up in a pastor's household, and dad's still going strong in that kind of work. So there's a certain degree of self-selection. Became a Christian as a young kid. Predictably, as a kid growing up in 90s Christianity, that got weird at some point because 90s Christianity has some cool elements and also is the moment at which it all kind of got weird. So I was right there in the main flow of that, was in ministry, around ministry. I went to Trinity College in Chicago, Deerfield, Illinois, went back for seminary there, did postgrad work at Nebraska at Kearney and a bunch of other school in between, just kind of stalling through my 20s to make it seem like I was doing something. And really became a fan of the history of ideas, how the stuff people thought before now got us to how we think about things now, including theology. So I really like that aspect of Christian faith. And that was also, I suppose, part of my own figure out if I want to do this Christianity thing as an adult process or not. And even after seminary and while working in ministry, kind of reached the point where I was like, hey, this doesn't make sense anymore. I guess I'm out. And kind of went through a period of frustration and not faith. Not frustration. That makes it sound like somebody just did something naughty and then I was mad and been out of shape. Just, I don't know. I just kind of felt for a while like, do we, any of us actually think this, or is this a thing that we perpetrate on people? This is weird. And so I kind of just put my faith back together, which was the result of wrapping my brain around the idea that the Bible is the story of God and what he's up to redeem things and not the story of people's behavior altering slightly. Yeah. And I'd always read it as the latter, not as the prior. And ultimately that human first interpretation really does make the Bible a horribly crappy book that just implodes on itself. It's unsustainable.
Yeah.
That interpretive matrix will fail. You'll run into too many conflicts and you'll either have to start lying to yourself or you're going to walk away. And I chose walk away. And thought, I kind of owe it to myself to take another run at this thing. I've got a lot of time, sunk cost, if you will. So I'm going to give it another run. And I got like 20 chapters into Genesis or whatever it was and was like, oh, my bad. Like, duh. The main character isn't me. The main character isn't 20th century evangelicals. The main character is obviously God. The plot is obviously how God's redeeming stuff, not me behaving slightly different. And then a lot of those things that had become conflicts in my brain, maybe I wasn't at peace with everything, but it hangs together. And so I don't know, since then I guess been less of an atheist and more of a Christian. And it's been interesting to see what the process of doing faith all over again is like. And especially as a pastor, one of the things that's cool is I think that it's been really easy to do honest ministry and honest conversation about the Bible. So I did that in an academic setting and in a church setting for a while. And then about 10 years ago, I just completely fluked into connecting with this church in Western Wyoming out in National Park territory. Just, I mean, crazy, wild, beautiful American West. I live in
beautiful country.
Oh yeah. One of the most remote towns in the continental United States.
Wow.
But don't picture small town America. Picture like an entirely self-contained, thriving, culturally diverse outpost with beautiful wilderness all around. And I get to live in a vacation. It's amazing. And I get to go to the best church I've ever heard of or been a part of. This is very, very quality, gracious, honest Christians. And they're really patient with me trying to talk about this in a way that sounds maybe a little different and in a way that maybe tries to be considerate of people who aren't quite sure what to make of it either from the inside or the outside. So yeah, that's how I got to where I am.
You know, one of the things that I like about what you do with your YouTube series is, you know, you're not overly dogmatic with what you're putting out there. You put out multiple different viewpoints a lot of times. And that's one of the things that the listeners to this program have gotten used to from me is, cool. You know, we both have our bents. We both have our biases. We know what we think. And when we come to those, I feel like I try to make it very obvious. Here's what I think, but you don't have to think this way. I'm more interested with you loving God's word and with you loving God than with my take on things.
I don't own the ideas. I'm sure I'm right about some stuff, and I'm sure I'm wrong about a ton of stuff. And if I knew what I was wrong about, then I would stop thinking that and change it. Problem is you never quite know where you're wrong.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a process and you just got to be gracious with people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's start off with the first question I want to ask you is, you know, you have a Bible program, they're listening to a Bible program right now. Why is it important for people to read and know their Bibles?
Whew. If you're a Christian, you think it's from God, like there's a deity on the other side of that book. So that's a big deal. Really, it's an opportunity to interact with someone who at least holds himself out as knowing everything, as having all of the right motives, as authoring your existence and seeing all the stuff that we don't see. So theoretically, and I understand there are people who think it's all a complete joke. I've been there, so I'm sympathetic to that crowd, but that's what it holds itself out as being. So if you're somewhat persuaded of the reality of that deity, or if you're where I think you and I are at, which is at this point, we'd say like, hey, we're in. Yeah. There's a God on the other end of this. Like, this is a chance to interact with the perspective of that deity, of a being who existed before time as we know it and will exist after time as we know it and authored our existence, and get to understand what this deity is like, what this deity is into, what the bigger picture is, and then gradually even distill that down into where we fit. I think the reason people don't like to read it that much is because, like I just described about my young faith especially, we just turned it into this completely trite, worthless, like, guide on how to swear slightly less. And it's just, that's not transcendent. It doesn't matter. There's no reason to read that.
Yeah. So it's important to read it if there's a real God on the other end. And we're both there. You know, and the listeners to this show, you know, they know that there's absolutely no question in my mind about that, you know, but actually getting into it is important. And that brings us to your YouTube series. So let's talk about that for a second. And let me say that, you know, if you're not familiar with Matt's YouTube, channel, his series, I encourage you to check it out. First and foremost, Matt, you are the king of the clickbait title in the best possible way. I love what you do with your video stills. Let me just read a couple of the titles of some of his videos.
I
lied about Matthew McConaughey, 400,000 errors in the New Testament. How did that happen? Enough about the Protestant Reformation to make you look cool at parties. And one of my personal favorites, Matt Whitman ruins treasured verses of the Bible. I just love those. And you've got a lot going on. Like I've done quite a bit of video work through the years. I know how much work it is to produce, edit, put out all these videos that you make. If you watch these videos, you'll see it too. These things are a lot of work. I'm sure it takes you a while. Why? You've got so many things on your plate already. Why are you spending the extra time, energy, and effort to put these videos on YouTube for people to engage with?
That's a great question. And I have a sneaking suspicion that if I just bounce that question back to you, you'll say my answer. So I'll answer that. But why do you do it?
I do it because... So I ended up doing some of the things that I'm doing because I really felt a call from the Lord. The Lord actually kind of hijacked some plans that I had and brought me to where I am. The podcast and some of the other things that I do, those were kind of natural outflows of what I was already doing. And they ended up getting mildly popular by accident. And so I just have kept doing them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My answer is pretty similar on everything except the calling thing. I'm in. I'm a believer. I'm an enthusiastic believer. I absolutely love the Bible. And even for all of its weird warts and stuff, some of which are my fault, I love church. But yeah, I can't point to that. I think for me, it's more of a, I know what I'm awful at. I know what I'm slightly less awful at, and the things that I'm slightly less awful at seem to lend themselves to trying to talk with a certain kind of person on the internet, the kind of person who's just sick of bickering about God, either from a religious perspective or an outsider looking in at religious perspective. And it kind of fits. I can't not have the conversation. It's beyond, you know, the stuff that I love most, like the humans who are dear to me. And my faith itself and the God behind it, that's what I like doing the most. Ooh, fly fishing is really good too. But I crave sitting down with people and not even necessarily having agreement, but other than agreement that we can have a civilized conversation about stuff that makes most people bicker like children.
Yeah.
And we might even make each other better for it. We might even grow deeper in our own convictions and my faith and my understanding of God and the world and the Bible by just having those conversations. And so you go and look around the internet, and I'm sure you found the same, and that's probably part of why you do this. The conversations suck about God on the internet. They're just mean and toxic. And honestly, the meanest people to me on my channel are not non-believers. There are some of those. Oh, wow. I've had to shadow ban a few people. They've been very, very creative. But the meanest people are angry Christians. Who, all I know of them is their comments, so I could be judging incorrectly, but based on their comments, like, Christianity is just one big giant fight for them.
Yeah.
They just pick people on the internet and go yell at them, and that's like what they're doing for the cause of the kingdom of Christ. What a waste of life. What a waste of time.
Yeah.
And so I'm so hungry to find people who just want to take the question seriously.
Yeah.
I goof around while taking it seriously. People who will think honestly with me about really important stuff. Like, I don't know, we're all going to die real soon. And does something happen after that? I think so. I'd like to consider that. I'd like to prepare to die sometime soon. I'd like to help other people prepare for that. Is there a deity on the other end of this? I think so. I would like to understand that deity better. And so I'm just hungry for the conversation. And I thought, if I put my ugly mug on camera and crack up a Bible and talk about some stuff, you know, some of which is stupider than others, then maybe I would draw out decent, like-minded people who don't have to agree with me on everything, but who can agree on what a good conversation about it looks like. And obviously we're having this conversation. So it's at least worked with one person.
It's worked with at least one person. I think you've got, I think you've got a few more than just one person engaged with you, but
yeah, my mom.
You know, if your mom thinks you're cool, you're doing well. You know, again, I just want to put a plug in for YouTube, and we're going to have links to all this in the show notes. But you know, Matt does a great job with his YouTube channel because, and it's perfect for the platform, I think, because you know, I think for the longest time, YouTube was inhabited by like 400-pound guys in tight-fitting white shirts and ties that were too short, getting up and thumping their Bibles in front of three people at their little storefront church, talking about how smoking is going to send you to hell. You know, meanwhile, they're as wide as they are tall. That seems like those were the videos that inhabited YouTube and you know, the internet for the longest time. And I love what you're doing because it's fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously, but you jump into the real stuff. You jump into the good stuff. And I think it just works perfectly. And I think it's something that everyone should check out.
Thanks. I really appreciate that. I got to jump in. You threw out the name of that one video with a horrible clickbait title. And it is. I'm nailed. That's absolutely. I put a video out last week that had a red circle with an arrow pointing to it. I mean, come on. That's shameless. So that one, 400,000 errors in the New Testament. How did that happen? Or whatever I called that one.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, what I'm doing there is acknowledging that in 30,000 partial or complete New Testament manuscripts, the source behind the New Testament, that you've got, you know, punctuation disagreements or small inconsequential spelling disagreements, a very minor percentage of which in any way would actually affect the meaning of the New Testament. But yeah, I'm blatantly trying to get people who want there to be 400,000 glaring errors that proves the New Testament's garbage. I want them to click on that. And I want to have an enjoyable conversation where we make each other laugh and we think about it. But it's been so funny, man, to see people from our tribe who probably think a lot of the same stuff we do, not watch the video at all and just jump in with absolutely withering. I think I got called a pile of human garbage on that video. I think I definitely got "get a life" all caps with like four exclamation points. So he super meant it. So I'm just saying, you know, there is a cost to clickbait titles, and it is angering people who didn't watch the video.
I don't think you should stop. I think if you go over there and you watch some of these, you'll agree with me. He's mastered the art of this in the best possible way, and I encourage you to keep going with it.
Cool. I'll probably stay after it then.
We're on that. I don't want to go too negative here, but what's the best comment? The best feedback you've gotten on both ends of the spectrum here, on the fun end and on the serious end.
If I give you the best one on the negative end, I don't know if you, I'm going to make too much work for you with bleeping it out. I mean, it was amazingly inventive. It was on a video I made where my kids found some kittens in the backyard at church and decided to nurse them back to health. And it was like, hey, life is a beautiful thing. And look at how intuitively my kids figured this out. And whatever you think about stuff, I think we can agree that life is a gift and something to be cherished. You just wouldn't think that would draw out the crazies.
No.
One dude came back with the most really cleverly crafted description of God that included genocide and some other things that were perhaps a bit deviant. And it covered like every offensive box you could tick. He got them all in like two masterful sentences. As the quick brown jumps over the lazy is to the alphabet, so this dude's comment was to all the offensive things you could say while being mad at Christians. It was amazing. And I love that dude. Also, I banned him from my channel.
I might go with a little bit of unnecessary censorship over that last sentence you just said, just for the fun of it. Stuff.
Yeah, you know what I'd recommend? Bleep the word fox and just leave the beginning and the end in there and just let everybody wonder what happened. They'll get the joke now if they didn't already turn it off. So in terms of the best stuff, man, I got a just beautiful handwritten letter from a gal in Colorado. I don't know, talking about kind of the same process that I just described going through myself, like trying to figure out what the adult faith is going to look like. I think there's a God. I think he's behind the Bible. I think Jesus is his son. I think salvation is a real thing. Christianity has some weird elements, but I really like the baby and I'm not willing to throw it out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Like that kind of, it's been neat when I've connected with people like me. And they can read between the lines to understand that we're going through a similar process. I got a really cool video from a guy who opened his video describing himself as an atheist from another country. I don't want to out him, so I'm being vague. He's made this 20-minute video that, you know, included my friend who I do the podcast with. But it's just time to, like, I had assumptions about Christians and people of faith and all of that. And you're making it so I can't think that. I'm probably not going to become a Christian, but, like, I don't know. Thanks for gently and unintentionally pointing out to me that I was kind of being a bigoted jerk and that maybe I could engage in friendship or trust with people who believe things that I don't about God. That was very meaningful. That video included tears. That was kind of crazy. But generally speaking, the stuff that melts my brain is when I get correspondence from competent, often educated adults who are doing really, frankly, great at life. They made decisions about God and faith a decade ago, 2 decades ago, and that's that. Put it in the rearview mirror. And through, I don't know, useful human normal interaction, talking about the Bible and theology and stuff, they've come to a place where they crack that question back open. Mm. And getting these emails from people who are not going through a crisis, they're not addicted to something, they're not at rock bottom, they're doing well. But they're rethinking the question of God and faith.
Wow.
That's probably the most meaningful to me because I think that stopped happening in about 1998. Like, honestly, and I don't know who I'm going to offend, but you can apologize for me after. I feel like the watershed moment for the gospel in our country was the impeachment of Bill Clinton in 1998. Hmm. Was it 99?
It's pretty close to that. It was probably like 97, 98, somewhere in there.
Okay. Yeah, that happened. And at that moment, whether you think that was justified or not is irrelevant. But at that moment, people who tend left in their ideology felt like people who tend right had declared war on them, that I think religious type people had asserted a degree of unsportsmanlike aggression politically that we hadn't done to each other before. It opened a Pandora's box. The retaliation started, the disputed election of 2000. Again, I don't care which side somebody's into. I'm just trying to size it up from the 10,000 foot view. That disputed election made things bitterer and worserer. Then mix in the response to 9/11 and debates about gay marriage and all of that. And the 2016 election, the Obama presidency.
Yeah.
And again, whatever you think about all of that, the gospel went from something that when you and I were kids was a truth about a greater kingdom and a greater king and a very other thing that was just other from all of our other debates and politics and all of that stuff, to it morphed into becoming a political identifier that with 84% accuracy based on the last election results in the United States indicates that you vote a certain way and think a certain batch of things, which has moved all over the place in those 20 years. It's a very moving target. And so whether one likes red or likes blue or whatever, the nature of the gospel has changed. And whereas when we were young, I would see competent adult people hear it and be like, wow, that explains a lot about life. That explains a lot about who I am and eternity, and that resonates with me, and I'm in. And there were no strings attached back then. That didn't mean that now you're a Rush Limbaugh listener or you were going to vote for Newt Gingrich. It just meant that Jesus is king, and I'm signing up for that, and I don't know how the rest is going to shake out. Now, I feel like 50% of the country is immune to the gospel. Because the political connotations, again, whether you agree with them or not, the political connotations have become so thick.
Yeah.
So you do not see people who are super competent and invested and already thriving at life hear the gospel and respond. So all the way back to your question, the most meaningful stuff, the most meaningful feedback I get is when I see that trend bucked. When I see or hear from people who clearly are doing okay at life, and they're like, I need to take another look at the God thing. And there's no politically loaded language to it, nothing. It's just God on his own merits. That is like dude, I can't even express, wildly encouraging to me.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, tell me this, you know, so you've got, you know, people who are re-engaging with that and they're kind of coming back to that. You've got, you know, lots of people engaging, you know, with your YouTube channel and the things that you do. And you mentioned the, No Dumb Questions. Did I get that right?
Yep.
The podcast you do with Destin. Again, and I want to recommend that one as well. That's a great podcast. I enjoy listening to that when I mow the lawn. So good work on that. But, what do you think is the best way for, anybody, no matter where they are, to engage or re-engage with the Bible? Personally, on a personal level, or maybe even like a church level, how do you feel like what's the best way for them to get back into it? If they're not reading it or they've stopped reading it, they're just, it's kind of on the shelf collecting dust.
Yeah. Well, I think that starts with why we're not reading it. And so one reason to not read it is because you think you already know all the stuff that's in there. I get that. I thought that going into seminary. My first class was with a dude named Robert Yarborough. And he's he's a New Testament scholar, pretty good at what he does. People might know the name, and he's smart, and we're not friends. He didn't like me very much. I don't blame him, because I thought I knew all my stuff and I didn't, as usual. And he did a pretest, because I think he had a lot of students just like me. And it was just a New Testament knowledge. This is just to help you know where you're at. Doesn't count for your grade. And I was like, click, click, let's do this thing. And I got a D minus, maybe it's a D plus. I don't know. All I know is it was bad and it wasn't quite failing. And I was just shamed. It's like, I really thought I knew this document front to back and did not need any more work on it. And then I realized I did. And I was a seminary student at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. It's a pretty good seminary.
Yeah.
I had no idea what I was talking about. So what I'm saying is, look, if I had no idea what I was talking about at that point in life, but thought that I did, it's just possible that maybe I still don't. And it's just possible that somebody who's put the Bible up because they think they've got it whipped, like maybe there's still more that we could get out of that. So one reason I think that people don't read it is because of a false sense of having already got everything they need to get out of it. I've already solved all of the questions of an infinite being. I think that's hubris. And I think as we age, we tend to get a little more humble and understand that things are trickier than we think. And so maybe it's just been a while since the decision has been made to put the Bible up. And since life has changed since then, maybe it's worth just seeing what's in there now. You're going to catch it with a different set of lenses. I think another reason that people would put the Bible up and not read it is because, like I was talking about a minute ago, it has become lumped in part and parcel with this stupid, infuriating, unending, nauseating culture war that you just can't get away from.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to fight, or at least the people who do are the loudest, and people of goodwill, like emotionally healthy people, are just going to want to step away from that garbage.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to spend my whole life squabbling about insane crap. And as a result, I think some folks will mistakenly lump the Bible in as one of the things that is so loaded that it's part of the insane crap and set it aside because they just want to step away from the madness. I would argue that if you feel that way, that's exactly the time to get the Bible back out, because the answer to the madness is in there. The gospel is completely counter to this stupid culture war that is happening. Even though Christians are involved in the culture war, even though we invoke the gospel in the middle of this stupid culture war, the gospel is other. The gospel transcends it. The message of Christ's kingdom is so different from what is driving you crazy about the world, it will melt your brain. Start at the beginning of Matthew and read this thing with a different set of antenna out, and you will find hope and relief from how nuts this has become. I think a third reason that people would set aside the Bible is that they just, as a fair-minded person, it looks like there's some crazy stuff in there.
Yeah.
And we, in this day and age, like, we don't like stories very much about war that doesn't seem fair or right. And I'm glad that we're put off by war in this day and age. I wish we were more put off by war, but with a weak hermeneutic, ooh, fancy word, with a weak interpretive approach to the Bible, you can look at that stuff and be like, if there's something disquieting in the Bible, oh, that means we should do it. Or Christians are implicitly told to do it. And I don't want to do that. So I don't want to be around the Bible. What I would suggest is that maybe picking that up again and taking another look, figure out that that reads a little differently than what gets repeated on the internet or what you landed on when you last looked at it when you were, you know, 21. Things change with time.
Yeah.
The document holds together a lot better reading it with God as the main character instead of us at the main character, especially in those problematic passages that just strike our modern sensibilities weirdly. I could probably give you another like 5 or 10 reasons that people would put away a Bible, but I think a great thing to do, and I'm biased because this is what I did and why I'm still a Christian, is to forget what you know, just set it aside. You can pick all that stuff back up in a minute or whatever. Pick a gospel. I'm a huge fan of Luke. I think Matthew is enormously effective. I mean, in the past I always recommended John, but I'm really high on Luke and Matthew right now for this question. And put aside the political antenna. Set aside the temptation to have Jesus make sure your side, blue, red, whatever, wins. Just think of it as other. Expect it to be other going in and see whether the kingdom that Jesus is describing doesn't actually exactly scratch every human itch ever. And see and think through what it sounds like he's saying in terms of inviting you to be a part of that.
Yeah.
It does not look like what you and I were raised with. God bless the people who raised us. They got a ton right. But it doesn't look like that. And the easiest way to get past that confusion is to just let the text do the work. It's there. God is on the other side of the thing. And I think it's profound.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. You know, getting re-engaged with it can feel daunting. And especially, you know, if you haven't been reading, if you haven't been, you know, listening, I mean, nowadays we have so much access to the Bible, in so many different ways. And if you haven't, there's lots of different paths you can take, but I like the, you know, recommendation, just jump in. You know, there's some good places to start. You know, it's like Matt said, you started with Genesis, you can jump in Luke, just jump in, just get in somewhere. If you're not currently engaged with it, you know, wherever you are in your walk with God or your not walk with God, jump in, read it.
Darren, if I may, and don't quit when it starts to irritate you.
Yeah.
I mean, remember the commercials that were like, apply to your scalp, that tingling sensation means it's working. I mean, it's the same thing. If it's irritating you, it's working. And like the whole premise of the document is that there is something wrong with our situation. Maybe it's not even your fault. Maybe it's just the bigger world and the brokenness of all the stupid things other people do. Whatever the case, your fault, somebody else's fault, nobody's fault. There's something wrong with our situation. And the deity that operates outside of the context of our situation is positioned to do something about it.
Yeah.
Not just in a make you swear less and behave slightly nicer way, but in something much more transcendent. And if you can set aside all of the political loadedness that we bring to the table, not that it brings to the table, there are answers on the other end, but we can't set it aside. So it's going to irritate you if you're reading it honestly. It's going to irritate you. It's going to clang a little bit, but it must, because we're the ones that are in a difficult situation looking for some outside deliverance or hoping something that's true and real exists. It should rub against us. There should be friction. If there's not, you're probably not reading it honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. When we went through, I said this about Revelation. I said this about a couple of different books that we've gone through on this podcast. And I said, you know, if you've read through Revelation, if you've read through a couple of these books, and you weren't offended, or you weren't troubled by some of the things in there, go read it again because you missed it. You need to keep reading it because, you should have been offended. There should have been something along the way that hit you. Okay. So I got to ask this. I have to ask this, as we're wrapping up here, what is an acceptable amount of poop to include in your medieval artistic renditions of Bible stories?
It depends on what the Bible story is. If the Bible story is, Haman going to the gallows, I don't think you probably need any poop. There's going to be other uncomfortable elements of that, giving what happens during hangings, but no poop there. If the story is of King Saul, perhaps pooping in a cave, like, look, don't duck it. the guy was pooping and David seized on the opportunity to make an important point. And so if I were to make a video about something, and I wouldn't because that's immature, but if I were to make a video about something like that, I would look for the artistic rendition of that incident that maximized the poop factor, just to demonstrate how real and human the Bible is.
I will have to put a link to that specific episode in the show notes. Again, Matt, great job with the YouTube series. I love it. I want to encourage everyone who's listening to this, you know, go check it out. Go check it out. It really is a great resource. Matt, tell us how people can find out about you out there on the interwebs.
Yeah. Sure. TheTMBH.com or the10minutebiblehour.com. They both work. That gets you to, I don't know, all the stuff about what's going on there. The 10-Minute Bible Hour, T-E-N is how I do it. On YouTube is where all of that content lives. Additionally, Matt Whitman, TMBH. I do my best to pay attention to Twitter. I know it took a couple DMs for us to get connected properly, so I'm sorry. But I do like hanging out on Twitter and meeting and interacting with people there, so that's an easy way to get me. I'm okay with saying this to your audience. I don't say this everywhere, but even the sermons from the church here every Sunday are online. That has a really different feel than most internet stuff, because that's written and delivered for a group of people in Lander, Wyoming. But I sense that a lot of people have enjoyed jumping in on that conversation. So you can find that anywhere you can get a podcast, at the Lander Evangelical Free Church. Search that in your podcast app. It'll come right up. No Dumb Questions is the name of the podcast I do with Destin Sandlin from Smarter Every Day. He and I are pals and we talk about stuff. That's a good way to summarize that show. It's pretty fun. Some people seem to like it. So again, No Dumb Questions on any podcast app. And then we are just about to launch a new YouTube channel called History Nugget that's going to be coming down the pike here about a month from the time that we're recording this. And I think it's going to be not horrible.
Awesome.
So that's a lot of stuff. Thanks for letting me reel it all off.
We're going to put all of that in the show notes. So if you want some easy links, depending on where you're listening to, what app you listen to this on, it'll be there. So just kind of click wherever those show notes appear. There's so many like new apps and stuff like that for podcasts nowadays. It's hard for me to keep up with where they're going to be. So just hunt for them somewhere around this episode and you'll find them. Cool. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Matt, thank you so much for joining us today. If any of you have any questions or comments, don't hesitate to reach out to either Matt or I. Again, all the links will be in the show notes. I'm your host, Darren Hibbs, and I'll be back next time with another day of the 10-Week Bible Podcast. Matt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks. Thanks for doing this and wonderful preparation. This is an enjoyable conversation. Thanks.
All right. See you next time.